Welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to the Struggle and Sisters show. And it just so happens you have caught us at a time where we are struggling. So
this is really struggling today. I just had to get up and wash my hands in the middle of the conversation for no reason.
She did just say, that's it. I got to go wash my hands. I don't know. Some kind of cathartic experience. She had it over by the sink. I saw it. She seems better now.
So. I feel much better. The secret to my heart is in washed hands.
You know what? That's what nursing school taught me. Wash your hands. Oh, I heard the other day someone said if they could see anything that was invisible, they would want to see germs. And okay. I said, no, you wouldn't be able to do anything.
Oh,
your life would stop.
It's true. Unless they were color coded, like this is a germ that's going to flesh eating germ.
Yes.
This one is mild cold. This one's a summer cold. You better run away from that.
Those are the worst.
Kidding me with that. I'd rather have a flesh-eating bacteria than a summer cold. Excuse me. I need to go wash my hands.
Back, ladies, you are listening to the Struggle Well Project podcast, the show dedicated to helping you not run away from home. Each week, I do my best to make sure that you learn something new, laugh a whole lot, and remember that you are already enough. So in a couple minutes, I am heading out to a podcaster retreat, and I'm so excited. It's hosted by Prep Dish. We're going to be hanging out in the hill country, brainstorming with each other, and just having all kinds of fun. And so I will be back next week to tell you how great it was. It's so important to get away with people who do what you do and see if you can't help each other do it better. So this is episode 154, and I am talking to my friend Shannon Martin. Don't forget, last week I talked to Ellie Holcomb. And if you know me, you know how much I love when Ellie Holcomb's on the show. We talked about cultivating what you're actually given, being grateful in the midst of closed doors, and what to do when we're overextended, because we've all been there. So head back and listen to last week's episode in case you missed it. So at the top of the show, you heard my sister just taking a moment to wash her hands, kind of helps her get centered. That is just a small sampling of the quality programming you get with the Struggling Sisters show. I mean, we are real, and some days we're just struggling. If you want extra special goodness from us, including never-before-seen peeks into our hand hygiene, we would love to have you join us. Just head over to patreon.com/strugglewellproject and get caught up on all the shenanigans. I want to say a special thank you this week to the Amandas. There's four of them. Amanda Anderson, Amanda Church, Amanda Meyer, and Amanda Redman. Ladies, there are not quite as many of you in Patreon as there are the Amys, but there are more than the Britneys. Okay, so you're not in last place. Come on, Britneys. Amandas, you are part of what makes our Patreon community so great. So thank you so much. All right, let's move on to the review of the week. Listen, you can think in your brain that iTunes reviews don't matter, but you know you've thought about listening to a podcast and you look at the reviews and they either don't have good ones or they've only got like three and you think, yeah, I don't know about this one. That's what reviews do. They let you know if a show is worth your time. So thank you so much to everyone who's left a review. Amy from The Messy Middle says, I'm not a mom, but I resonate with the idea of struggling well. Though Emily talks to moms, first and foremost, she's talking to humans who are real. I relate to being human and living a messy life. Thanks, Emily. Well, Amy, you are so welcome. And I actually know Amy personally, and she is a human who is real. And I appreciate you, Amy. Amy actually has a blog called messymiddle.com. Check it out. So a little shout out to Amy. So this week, like I said, I'm talking to Shannon Martin. She's a wife and a mom and an author. You really need to hear about her because she has made a transition from kind of insulated, beautiful country living to a messy community of misfits that has changed her life for the better. God asked them to do something big, and they did. When God asks you to do something, even if it makes no sense, you know it's going to be good. I'm really excited to share this story with you. So let's go ahead and get down to business. Hey, Shannon, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm so good. Will you please tell us about you and your family? Let's just get that ball rolling.
Yeah. So I am married to Corey. We met in college. So we've been married now for about 19 years. And he is the chaplain at our county jail. That brings a really unique perspective into our lives. And then we have four kids, So our oldest son is Robert. He's 24 years old. So he is actually off on his own now. And then we have three younger kids that are still at home. So Calvin is 13 and in eighth grade. Ruby is 12 in sixth grade. And Silas is almost 10 and he's in fourth grade.
Okay. All right. So I definitely want to talk about that, the way that God put your family together. I know you guys dealt with infertility that never resulted in pregnancy. We hear of so many people who were infertile, then they got pregnant. And
Right.
even the other day, I was talking to somebody and telling my story, and I said something about when I got pregnant, and I'm like, hold it, I've never been pregnant. I think we're just used to the story ending with pregnancy, and I'm like, I've never been pregnant. Sorry about that.
Yeah. No, I'm the exact same. It is a unique story
It
because
is.
that's not usually, and that's something that I came up against, when we were adopting, and especially in the beginning, in the early stage of our adoption journey. And I don't know if this was your experience too, but there were so many people who were like, oh, it's great that you're adopting, but you just wait. There was always this like, oh, you just wait. As soon as you bring, this baby home, you're going to get pregnant. And it was really frustrating for me to hear that.
Oh, I know, because then it just never happened. But actually, when my son came home, the second kiddo that we adopted, I told my husband, like, please go get a vasectomy because of all the you just waits. I just couldn't, I didn't want more kids. It was too overwhelming to
No.
me.
Well, and I didn't like it honestly made me upset because it felt like I was, this adoption thing is just kind of like a holdover
Oh.
until I get what I really want. And
Oh,
that's
I
not
get
how I
it.
felt at that point.
Yes.
And it's funny that you say that about a vasectomy because that's how, I mean, we still are like, they've never been able to pinpoint the cause of our infertility.
Yes,
So
us either.
I'm always like, this makes me nervous. I'm 42 now, but
Yes.
crazier things have happened, and I am just,
No.
that is not something I'm hoping for at all, to say the
No.
least.
And some women, it just doesn't go away, the desire for biological kids.
Right,
But
right.
yeah, it went away for me like right away.
Me too. Like quickly, quickly.
Isn't that funny? Oh, okay. So your newest book is so good, Shannon. And I interview so many authors, but I'm telling you what, it's called The Ministry of Ordinary Places. And I love it because I struggle with
Yeah.
discontentment. And I knew that this was going to be really convicting, and it was, but it was so encouraging because you're talking about loving our neighbors, but then you're showing us how you're doing it and how messy it is and how really not Pinterest worthy it is, which we need to hear about that, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're talking about injustice, but then you show us how you're actually fighting it and how, I don't know, I love this book. So thank you so much for writing it.
Thank you for reading it. I'm so glad that you liked it. And it means a lot to me just to hear, it's not all the way into the world right now, but people are reading it, and it's just so fun as the author to hear you say that because I'm thinking, oh, good, that's what I wanted it to do. I wanted it to be like, this is what it looks like in my life. It's going to look different in your life, but this is what it looks like practically speaking. And it is kind of a bit of a mess a lot of times around here.
Well, in the whole thing, I have so many highlights and then exclamation points, and I wear like yes next to so many things. I just love
Yeah.
it. So, okay, you started off by making a really big move from the country. Like, wasn't your Instagram handle like farm girl or something? Like, it was part
Well,
of you.
you're missing a key part. It was Flower Patch Farm Girl, not
Oh.
just Farm Girl.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a girl who's about to move into the inner
Right.
city.
Oh my goodness. Yes. That's who I was for a long time, and then I had this big identity crisis and
Talk to me about that. Like, what happened? Did you move for his job? Because your husband was in politics and now he's a chaplain.
I'll just like give like a quick overview because
Yeah.
it is there was a ton of change and transition that all kind of happened within, an 18-month period of time. But my husband worked in federal politics. He worked for a congressman, and for a time we lived out in DC. I at that point in DC took a job that was very political, and we were involved in really conservative politics at that time.
Okay.
We did end up, he was promoted to a district position back here in Indiana. And so, yeah, we were just, we were living our kind of picture perfect life, we thought, so we thought. And so we were living in what we would have said was our dream farmhouse. We were both country kids raised in the country, and we'd bought this beautiful white farmhouse on 6 acres, even with the barns and the pasture and all of the things.
Yes.
We're starting our family. And like we kind of already hinted at, I mean, our family was built in a way that we had not expected. Uh-huh. But, you know, adoption is a pretty, like, if you're going to be wrong about something in your life, I mean, let it be that your kids are these amazing kiddos who come to you in a really surprising way. It was just a wonderful surprise to us. So,
yeah,
I mean, I continued working with the job that I had from our home, and life was just trucking along. I mean, I did start blogging at that time. My blog kind of started out, you know, it was a lot of like cute kid pictures. Yeah. But it was also kind of, you know, I caught some early traction with decorating posts, and, you know, it was very kind of this lifestyle blog.
Okay.
And quite abruptly, and I don't even know, I mean, it's, the story is a lot longer than this, but pretty abruptly, we read a book, or no, let me back up. It was not a book yet. We heard the sermon series that became the book Radical by David Platt.
Oh yeah.
And it just like immediately leveled us. I mean, immediately it rocked our world to the point that I remember the first night we listened to his first part of the series, we just kind of stumbled into bed. Like, what just happened?
Oh man. Okay. So were you at that point, were you like excited or like, oh no.
I mean, we were like filled with dread because, and I know that sounds dramatic, but it sounds dramatic because it was dramatic.
Well, and you and knew what that meant was less flower patches.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want it to mean that, but you know, the crux of his message is kind of the crux of the gospel, which is care for the poor, defend the oppressed, give up your life to follow me. And so, you know, we're listening to this, and Corey and I had both been raised in the church our entire lives. I mean, we went to Christian college. We did all of those things. Mm-hmm. And so it was really disorienting.
Because you thought you were following Christ.
Well, yeah.
And you were, like, in a way.
We were. And it's not like the Bible was new to us. You know, it's like we knew Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We knew the life of Jesus, we thought. And so it was all of a sudden kind of this sort of the scales falling off of our eyes and realizing like, uh-oh, you know, it was just like, what is happening? Because we felt that immediate conviction, but we didn't know what to do with it. And it was a long process to just walk through that and to have God sort of, you know, one step at a time and never more than one step at a time, like just kind of direct our steps. And in the end, which was, you know, an end is always a beginning too. But in the end, we did sell that farm. My husband's boss, the congressman at the time, ended up resigning pretty abruptly. Okay. And he took a job kind of in the interim with a nonprofit. We sold our house, moved to a low income neighborhood in a nearby city. And then about a year after that, we adopted Robert, our oldest. And then shortly after that, he became the chaplain of the jail. So yeah, it was, I mean, there was just a lot of shifting around there for a while.
Yeah. I want to say a special thank you to Perfect Keto for being one of the new sponsors of the Struggle Well Project. So whether you're following a ketogenic diet or not, Perfect Keto has great products that you should consider. When my husband, who is doing keto, talks about Perfect Keto, he gets so excited. I told him I was about to record this ad, and he said, okay, you need to tell him the salted caramel and the chocolate sea salt ketone base. I have it for breakfast every day, and I love it so much. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to mix the two together, but I do, and it's amazing. So I told him I would tell you. He's super pumped about it. I am not currently a keto person, but they have a nut butter that I put on my bagel, but it's got macadamia nuts, cashews, and coconut. It is some kind of heavenly smooth. It's amazing. So Perfect Keto wants to give Struggle Well Project listeners 20% off their whole order. So if you go to perfectketo.com/SWP and then use coupon code SWP at checkout, you'll get 20% off. That's perfectketo.com/SWP and then SWP at checkout.
Okay, so there's so much there, but I'm thinking as a listener who's hearing all that, and they're in the point where they've got the house and it is beautiful. And they, first of all, I just want to say having a beautiful house is not a bad thing.
Right.
And what you were doing before wasn't a bad thing. But when God did something in your heart and you chose to follow that, and it, like you said, initially there was dread.
Yeah.
But you and your husband were, sounds like, on the same page about it from the start. Was that?
Yeah, you know, we really were. And I'm glad that you clarified some of that. It's like I said, it's hard to just summarize all of that backstory in a quick 2 minutes or whatever. All of that backstory is really my first book. So all of that's in Falling Free. And it's a lot more in depth, but it's important to say, and I say this all the time, you know, like you just said, there's nothing wrong with living in the country. There's nothing wrong. I live in a beautiful home now. I mean, that's something that I do value. And, you know, I do like to make my environment pretty. And, you know, those are things that are still part of me. For us, our call was to kind of move out of the sort of comfort and security that we had created for ourselves. That was the thing that I clung to, you know, and I think a lot of times that's, sometimes I look back on that and think, what was the point? Or I used to feel like, what was the point of living in that beautiful farmhouse for 4 years? We weren't, we thought we'd be there forever and we weren't there long at all. And I really feel like for me, the point in having that thing that I had always wanted was my opportunity to understand surrender. You know, it's like that was the thing that all throughout the process, you know, Corey and I were on the same page pretty quickly with like, we don't know what's happening and we feel kind of sick to our stomachs. And we know that we are called to love the poor and the marginalized, but we honestly don't know the poor and the marginalized. Like it was, you know, we lived in a very homogenous community. I mean, everybody, we were surrounded with wonderful people, but they really lived and looked and believed just like we did. So we knew that for us, there are, you know, God is a creative God and he has all different kinds of ways of carrying out his will. But for us, we knew that eventually we were going to be, you know, asked to lay down that farmhouse. And it was the hardest thing. I mean, it sounds so silly now, but it was just the hardest thing. And it took us a while to really come to terms with that. So, you know, it felt like it happened quickly, but in some ways it felt like it was just kind of agonizing, you know, coming to these moments of clarity.
Okay. So was selling the house your first step? Because I think if you feel this kind of stirring in your heart, knowing what you're actually supposed to do about it is hard. And then sometimes, because we don't really want to do it anyway, we lose momentum and then move on to something else.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, our first step was putting the house on the market. And in my mind, it was kind of like, okay, Corey and I both felt, and let me say this, you know, for months, I was saying to Corey, I think we're supposed to sell our farm. And every single time he would say, no, we're not. Everything's fine. You know, just kind of like, settle down, Shannon. It's fine. It's fine. Which is the answer that I wanted him to give me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
like
good.
When you say something to your husband or a friend because you expect a certain response. And eventually, when I said it, he said back to me, yeah, I think you're right.
And you're like, no.
I was so mad at him. Yeah. I mean, I cried. It was like, it was that feeling of doom. Like, this is really happening.
Yeah.
So we did put the house on the market. And at that point, a lot of the people around us kind of flipped out.
Okay.
And the thing that we heard a lot from people who really love us and people who love the Lord was, you know, this is your Isaac. Like, God would surely never want you to actually sell the farm. He just wanted to know that you would be willing to sell the farm.
Oh, man.
And it was really interesting to see how other people felt so invested.
Well, and because it convicts them and they're like, well, I'm not selling my farm.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, there was also some just fear, you know, that people had about, I mean, there is something to, you know, living. We lived in a really beautiful and very safe and secure environment.
Yeah.
And that's all there was to it. I mean, it was just, you know, we lived back this long lane. We had cornfields all around us. Like, we very much were in sort of a bubble. And it's, bubbles can look all different kinds of ways. And there are still times now that I feel like, well, you know, I need to be careful that I'm not just existing in a new kind of bubble, you know?
Oh, interesting. What do you, okay, so I have a couple questions. Number one,
sure.
When you think of the farm, all these, how long has it been? How many years?
We've been here now for 6 years.
Okay, so longer than you were at the farm.
Yeah.
So when you think of it, do you have a longing or do you say, like, where are you at with that?
Yeah. The thing that we have said from the beginning is that we don't miss it.
Okay.
I mean, I don't feel that. And I really never have. I haven't felt that longing that you say, but what I do miss, and I write about this in the Ministry of Ordinary Places, what I miss is that my whole self, my whole Shannon was just in a very different place to where now, you know, I think back of who I was on the farm and I wasn't close to suffering there. Mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling the suffering around me there. I mean, I didn't worry about the things that I worry about and I didn't feel burdened then by the things I feel burdened by. And so there are some times that I feel like I miss that and I don't want to go back to it.
Right.
But there are times that I feel like, wow, that does seem a lot more peaceful. You know, that does seem more comfortable.
You moved into the tension, you know, internal tension happened when you moved.
That's right.
And did that thing.
That's it.
Okay. So what do you think what bubble could you possibly be in right now?
Well, I just think 6 years in, this is our new normal.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's quite the same because we are surrounded with such a wonderful and diverse group of people and neighbors and friends. But I do think there's always the temptation to kind of walk towards people who agree with us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to circle up with the people who, you know, we can all be mad at the same things together. Or, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and the way that we see the world, the way that my husband and I see the world has fundamentally shifted because of our neighbors. Like I say this all the time because it's so true, but my neighbors have changed my life.
Okay.
They have changed the way I see the world. So, you know, the things that I sort of clung to 10 or 8 or 6 years ago are different than the things I cling to now. But it's really important that I still maintain friendships with people who believe differently than me and who see the world differently than me. And, you know, I think that's so important for the growth of our character and for for our growth in Christ to really keep that net cast widely.
Yeah.
I think that's important. So it's just something I'm always kind of aware of, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's good. Let's talk about that because you're building community with people who are not like you because you're building community with your neighbors. And I wanted to read, I just loved this whole section. So I'm just going to read it and give people kind of a sense. You started like this group you call the Misfits and you just kind of texted people who are close by and people who are not like you, but you just kind of started this group. And you say, we bear a striking resemblance to many of the casseroles and strange stews that grace our Monday night table. Not so pretty to look at, but immensely satisfying. You say, go on to say that you have no idea how badly your random, regular self needs these kinds of people near. You don't have to plan an annual vacation together or go changing your will, but with any luck at all, there'll be some oversized personalities in the group and hopefully someone who grates on you just a little. This is precisely what keeps us tender. Find the strangest crew you can. Pull them from the far corners of your reach and draw them in. Do you know someone who seems a little needy, depressed, hyper, overly shy, too opinionated, extra cranky? Perfect. They're on the list. I just love how you go on to just talk about how rich it is because it is a ragtag group of people who
it's everything to me. You know, we're recording today on a Tuesday, so that means that last night I was with that very ragtag group of people. And they are foundational. They're like the thing that we need. And it's funny because last night, you know, there were some activities that were conflicting and things like that. So we normally meet and have dinner together for an hour. And then we do Bible study for a second hour. And last night, for some whatever reason, it didn't work for us to meet for dinner. But we were all like, but we still need to get together. And we've never done that before. I mean, but it's like, there's this, we just see the fruit of just continually gathering around that table. And even when it's inconvenient and even when half the people can't be there and even when we can't make it work to eat together, I mean, we just need it. It's just something that we've really come to rely on at this point. And it's everything.
All right, ladies, I want you to close your eyes. Wait, don't close your eyes if you're driving, but I want you to imagine the underwear you got on. I know. It's weird, but just hang with me for one second. Do you love them? Are they your favorite? If the answer is no, then it's time to try Tommy John. Tommy John is obsessed with all the little details, down to the stitching that they use and the fabrics that they use. That's what makes their men's and women's underwear have a no edging guarantee. The waistbands stay put. The fabrics are incredibly light, moisture wicking, breathable. They move with you, not against you. I personally think we got enough stuff going against us in the day. We don't need our underwear to be against us too. Yes? Their women's underwear was so popular that it sold out real quick, but now it's back in stock. So before you spend another dime on cheap, multi-pack underwear, remember, there's a better way. With Tommy John, there is no adjustment needed. So go to TommyJohn.com/SWP now, and you'll save 20% on your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/SWP for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/SWP. Myro is making deodorant better, like a lot better. It's a new kind of deodorant that you need to know about. Myro delivers obsession-worthy, naturally effective deodorant that looks as good as it smells. They make their natural deodorant with a custom blend of essential oils, and they release over time to keep you fresh and dry. So here's how it works. You choose your scent, you choose your case, and you choose your color. You get a refresh every 3 months, delivered straight to your door, conveniently timed for when most people run out of their deodorant. You can switch scents, you can press pause, you can stop anytime that you want. What I like about Myro a lot is that the case is refillable and the scents are good for your body. They're also good for the planet. Since you can refill the case, plastic waste is reduced by half, and also the smells are fantastic. Myro sent me one called Cabin Number 5. It really does smell like the very best parts of being outside. So to get 50% off of your first order and get started today for just $5, visit mymyro.com/SWP and use promo code SWP. So again, that's 50% off your first order. Get started today for $5 by visiting mymyro.com/SWP and use promo code SWP. Okay, so we are in our culture love to, like you said, be around people who are like us and not be around people who are annoying, not be around people whose kids are annoying. And so talk to me about why this is so important to you and how do you make yourself keep being around people who annoy you?
Yeah, well, and let's be honest, like, I know for a fact that I annoy people.
Yeah,
you totally. Know, like, so part of my point in saying this is, like, it's important for us to remember that, you know, my kid is often the one causing the trouble. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm the one that is often too opinionated or the one dominating conversation or the, you know, I see those things in myself more readily now, which is a really important thing because I see it in people around me. You know, I feel like it's important to kind of walk that line between, you know, it's so hard to explain why this group is so magical and, you know, it's magical because it's not magical. You know, it's just so, it's so weird. And we have such an interesting group of people that, you know, some come and go and some stick around and some are single, some are married, some are divorced, some are straight out of jail. Some are immigrants. Some are, I mean, it's just, it's all over the place and it's a pretty small little group, but we rely on each other like family now. I mean, there's no two ways about it.
How does it go with like inviting people? It's just like whoever wants to come can come.
Yes. And it's funny because there was last summer, we took the summer off because it's just summer is hard. Mm-hmm. And our summer vacation here is short. We only get like 8 weeks. Our kids do.
Are you kidding me? That sounds amazing.
Well, it kind of is.
Okay.
But this summer we were just like, you know, we're 1 year in deeper and it's like nobody wanted to take the summer off. So
I love that.
We kind of bounced around. We typically meet in the basement of our church, but you know, sometimes we would meet at homes and different things like that. Well, anyway, one of the evenings, this guy, we were meeting at my friend Karen's house and there was this man there. And I was like, okay, I've never seen him before. And he must, you know, Karen and her family must have invited him. And so we're getting dinner around and she finally like, you know, sidles up to me and says, who is that? Did you bring him? I was like, no, I thought you brought him.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it took a while for us to solve this mystery. Basically, another one of our cohorts kind of just met him on the street and invited him. Okay. And so he just shows up now. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. But everybody's always like a tiny bit confused about like, who is he really? Where did he really come from? But we have this standing rule. And we had a couple of families that for different reasons, they had to kind of pull out. And so I sent out a group Facebook and just said, you know, be aware, be paying attention to the people around you. And we are very inclusive. So it's just like, you know, if you see somebody and you feel that thing, like, yeah, they seem a little lonely, or they seem a little like, you know, they're a little bit on the outskirts of a circle friend, or, you know, whatever the case may be, just invite them. And so that's what somebody had done. And now he's kind of a part of us now. So
do you call him the mystery man, or do you know his name?
I do know his name.
Good. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good community building right there, Shannon.
It's so, I mean, it's just like our conversation. When you have people from so many different walks of life and so many different perspectives and histories, I mean, you cannot imagine how wild the conversation can get. I mean, it's just, we're all over the place.
I'm sure.
We have different kind of faith journeys. Some of us have been in the church forever. Some of us are brand new. Some of us have a lot of questions, and some of us think we have a lot of answers. And it's just, it's a beautiful thing.
Okay. So what, do you bring your kids? Like, what does that look like?
I do. So when we started this, you know, maybe 4 years ago, our kids were all younger, and we started it off in my house, in our unfinished janky basement. And at that point, there was another family with us who had three little boys. And then, you know, Silas was young and a maniac at the time. And so we intentionally had, for a while, for a couple of years, we like lined up a babysitter, like a, you know, a high school or college girl that would come and just kind of corral the kids. At this point, the kids are all, you know, they're older enough that they just kind of do their thing.
Okay.
And we have an Uncle Jesse who comes. So he's a, you know, he's a single guy in his early 30s, and he's like a 7-year-old at heart.
Funny.
And so he a lot of times just comes and hangs out with the kids, and they're loud and noisy, and it's fun for them too, though, you know?
Yes.
So it's just a, yeah. I mean, I think it's worth thinking about. Like, our thing was, we wanted it to be accessible. So we wanted people with young kids to feel comfortable coming.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted it to be, we only read out of the Bible. Like, we've never done a book study, which I'm by no means opposed to, but we knew if people were dropping in and out, we didn't want people who, you know, a lot of the people around us don't have extra money. So we didn't want people to have to buy a book.
That's good.
And we wanted people to be able to just drop in and drop out, and, you know, without like, oh, well, sorry, you haven't read the chapter, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So yeah, we're always trying to keep our eye on how it can be really accessible.
Yeah. Okay. So is the Bible study part a barrier to people when you invite them, do you find?
No, not so far. Okay. I mean, there are a couple of people that I initially reached out to just because, you know, they were kind of on my heart. And, you know, one of them just said pretty point blank, like, you know, he was nice about it, but he's like, yeah, it's not really my cup of tea. And, you know, it wasn't his thing. He wasn't into it. So we see him in other places. But yeah, a lot of the people coming out of the jail in particular that we've invited along the way, they're really, really craving that. Yeah. While they're in jail, you know, people who want to kind of dig in and, you know, learn and grow in those ways, jail is can be a really wonderful opportunity for that. But once they're out, that's just a whole new ball game. So yeah, I mean, we find that people are pretty drawn to that.
Okay. I think I'm trying to think of what a listener would think with small kids. And so my question is like the obvious, like, tell me about safety. How do you feel safe? Do you feel like this is wise? All those things.
Yeah. I mean, that's why with real little kids, it's helpful if you can find somebody that you trust to babysit the kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an important question. It's a question I get a lot.
Yeah.
I would just say that Corey and I in particular, and I think the other parents with younger kids, like, we're pretty vigilant.
Okay.
I've never felt unsafe, but I'm also pretty aware of, like, you know, the adults need to be in with the adults.
Yeah.
And like, if there were adults wandering off to be with the kids, like, I would be aware of that.
For
and
sure.
That would be a concern. And, you know, so,
you
know, we're kind of in the same location together, and we're pretty, you know, you use some like common sense with stuff like that. But for the most part, like, the core of our group is just really people that I would deeply trust, you know, but we do have people that are in and out. And so it's important to keep that stuff in mind.
Yeah. Okay. So, because of where you live and the people that are around you, you mentioned that there's a cycle of poverty, there's cycles of addiction, and you, in your book, kind of detail what that looks like when you really start to invest in someone and you love them and you really do care about them, and then they're gone. And you know that is not a good thing. For some of us, when someone's just gone, they're like, oh, maybe they got a new job or maybe they went on vacation. But you know that for your people, that's not a good thing. How do you maintain hope? What do you just talk about that?
That I would say, especially, you know, when we were newer into this part of our life, I don't know how else to kind of identify it. You know, when Corey started working at the jail, and I guess something that I haven't mentioned yet, when we adopted Robert, our oldest, he was 19 at the time and he was in jail. And so there's, you know, that's, of course, I'm leaving a lot of that story out, but for the sake of brevity, which is something that is not my strong suit. But when we adopted him, he was in jail. He was then sent to prison. And then he was released on home detention to us when he was 20.
Okay.
So Robert and his kind of friend group. And then when Corey started at the jail, I mean, I was very green to anything that had to do with addiction. I mean, it was not something that I had grown up with as, you know, a part of my life. It wasn't something I knew a lot about. It was really kind of a crash course in understanding just kind of the nuts and bolts of addiction. And so I remember in those early years just feeling heartbroken all the time. And I would say because you know, people end up in jail and they have the opportunity to get clean. And Corey and I talk a lot about like what he sees with these guys in jail. He sees their best self because they're in jail. They're clean. They're sober. If they need meds, they're on their meds. They don't have the stress and the drama of life on the outside. And, you know, they come to a really healthy place. But what I see is people once they get back out of jail, and I know getting out of jail or prison is like the hardest part.
So stressful.
You're immediately thrust back into society that doesn't really want you to be a part of it.
Well, and frankly, you're not that comfortable there either because you know what goes on in the jail. There's structure and a system.
Well, and most people, when they get out, you know, they're being released back into a life where everyone they know or many of the people they know and are close to have addiction.
Yeah.
So we've just had our heart broken and broken and broken. But now that still happens and it's still heartbreaking and devastating. And there is a part of me that's always a little like, you know, I just worry and I worry probably when I shouldn't and all of those things. But I also have time on my side now a little bit more. And there are people that I can look back on and see, you know, these are some people who are the closest people in our lives. They're like family to us now. And they've gone through relapse and they've gone back to jail. And, you know, but now we're years out. Now we're four years out. And we see so much redemption. It's like, you know, you just ride that roller coaster. But after enough time, you have a couple, maybe it's just like a handful of people or a couple of people that you can see and you can look to them as like, I know God can redeem addiction.
Yeah.
I know God is bigger than meth. I know he is because I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't always go that way, but it helps tremendously to see people who have fought through to the other side by the grace of God. I mean, it just helps.
Yeah. I want to say a special thank you to Daily Harvest for being a sponsor of today's episode. So back to school is here and the fall is busy. I get to do a lot of traveling this fall and go speak and see all kinds of different people all over the country, and I'm so excited. But can I tell you, when I need to grab something healthy before I hop on a plane, I know exactly where to turn: Daily Harvest. Daily Harvest delivers perfectly portioned cups of frozen organic fruits and vegetables right to my door. All I have to do is add water or my favorite milk to the cup, and then I blend it up. And if you're not that into smoothies, Daily Harvest's new savory harvest bowls are amazing healthy dinner that's faster than takeout even. My favorite Daily Harvest smoothie right now is the chocolate blueberry one. Throw some almond milk in there. It's really, really good. So if you have not tried Daily Harvest yet, go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code SWP and you'll get 3 free cups in your first box. That's promo code SWP for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. Do you ever feel like, I've had enough, this is too painful, like I can't do this anymore, or do you not feel that way?
I mean, we have bad days, and bad days are usually bad nights because, you know, that's just how it goes, right? Mm-hmm. Like the sad feelings come up when it's dark.
Yeah.
We still have those days, and I know that we always will. I mean, I think living is suffering, and I think, you know, there was a time that I didn't understand that, and I thought, you know, suffering was just something to be avoided, and now we know, like, life requires us to lean into suffering and to lean into the suffering around us. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a time where I felt like, okay, I'm out. Okay. And there have probably been moments, like in my darkest moments, when I've said things like that, but I didn't really mean it. Because the thing is, you know, a friend of mine, we had some pretty like heavy stuff going on around us. This was a year or so ago. And I was writing a lot of kind of dark stuff, you know, kind of processing on my blog or wherever. And she ran into me and said, yeah, I've been kind of worried about what you've been writing. She said, are you still sad? And I just looked at her kind of like, well, yes, of course I'm still sad. You know, like this has been the saddest years of my life, but it has also been the happiest, most joyful, most redemptive years of my life. And so you can't have just one. Like I think suffering and celebration, they do go together. And if you want one, you have to kind of take the other with it. Like that's how we taste celebration, is by tasting the suffering. And you see God at work. I think in those moments where it's like, where I feel close to the breaking point, like I just need a break. I don't need to move away. I don't need to just, you know, I'm done. I'm out of here. I just need probably like a nap, or I need to go to bed early. And I might need to for a while, like a few, not just one night, but like, I need some rest. I need to hole up in my house, and I need to do the things that, you know, that kind of bring some stability to my soul. But, you know, that's just who we are. That's what we need as humans.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we spend so much of our time avoiding suffering, and that just kind of stunts the joy we can experience as well.
Right. And we, you know, when suffering happens, and it does, and it will, if we don't understand, like, you know, you lean into that suffering and you just kind of ride it out, and you ride it out with the people around you. Mm-hmm. And until we really understand that, it can feel devastating. I mean, it can feel like, okay, this is just where we live now. We're just stuck here and suffering forever.
Mm-hmm. Or I did something wrong, and that's why I'm here. Well,
yeah,
it's just
and
life.
I can't tell anybody about this. There's nobody around me that can handle this. I mean, I think so much of being a neighbor is just, number one, like not being offended by every little thing, and by not being afraid, by just, you know, I was just with a dear, dear neighbor of mine, and she shared some of the hardest things. And I just felt like, my job right now is to just sit here and look her in the eye and drink my tea and listen to this. I cannot fix it, and she knows I can't. Mm-hmm. It's a tremendous comfort. And I've been on both sides of this. It's a tremendous comfort to find somebody willing to just bear your pain by just sitting in it with you.
Yeah. And to realize, as the person just listening, like, you are in a really holy role. Just to sit there and listen is just so beautiful, to be able to hold that for them or with them.
Yeah, but you're going to hold it then. You know what I mean? It's like I walked home, and I'm holding this pain, and it's in a very small part, it's my pain now. Like I broke a piece off and put it in my pocket, and I'm going to carry it around with me now. And that's what community can be.
Yeah, it's good. Oh man. Well, I love this book. I'm going to be reading it over and over. I told you, like, there was a girl in my neighborhood whose son died, and I knew I needed to talk to her, but I also felt like I couldn't possibly handle it myself. And after reading just a couple chapters, I'm like, that's it. I'm making some cookies and marching over.
And you know, like, I'm assuming she didn't hate it that you did that, right?
Oh my gosh, no. And again, I didn't want to have to say, I'm bringing you these cookies because your son just died. Like, I didn't want to. And she opened the door and she took them and she said, thank you. And she hugged me and we talked. Like, I didn't have to say the hard, awkward things I didn't want to say. Like, she knew. Right. She's not dumb. She knows her son died.
Right. You showed up.
Yeah.
You showed up. I mean, that's where, when our neighborhood became our new normal, And I'm sitting here like, well, you know, there's part of me that's like had gotten used to this kind of upheaval and like, okay, this is all too, is it too comfortable now? Am I back to where I started? You know, all of these thoughts and feelings. And it's like, now we get to dig in. And that contact that you made with your neighbor is both a huge thing and a small thing. I mean, I think that's where the sweet stuff is. It's like I wrote the part that you read, like you don't have to invite her on your next vacation. It doesn't mean that now, you know, you're going to do that every single day if you brought her cookies every day. I don't know. I can't imagine having a problem with that either, but maybe it would be a little much. But, yeah. But what it says to her is like, I am here.
Yeah.
I'm here and I'm going to be here.
And cookies are such a dumb, unrelated thing to death, but it is something, and something counts. Like, I think we just feel like it's so inadequate what we're trying to do here.
We talk ourselves out of the stuff. What I try to do, I still talk myself out of that stuff all the time. And I tell myself all of these lies like, oh, it's just going to make her feel worse, or it's going to, I'm going to be really awkward, or I'm going to say the wrong thing, you know, blah, blah, blah. I do it all the time. Mm-hmm. But when I put myself on the other side of the door, and that's what I try to do, like, how would I feel if a neighbor, maybe a neighbor that I don't even know that well, in my grief showed up with cookies? I can only imagine that I would be comforted in some way, that I would feel loved in some way. And that's our way forward.
Yeah.
And you did it. And I love that you did it.
I did it, Shannon. All because of you. Okay. Awesome. Well, we are almost out of time. I wanted to take a moment and do a lightning round where I ask you a bunch of unrelated questions.
Okay.
Okay. So just try to answer as fast as you can. You can do this.
Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous.
You can do this. What is the ugliest thing that you own?
The ugliest thing that I own? Probably my sweater that I wear. It's kind of like I use it as almost like a bathrobe, but it's actually a sweater. And so I wear it around the house and it's hideous.
Okay. I love it. What is something you probably should do, but you're not going to do?
Something I probably should do, but I'm not going to do, is put on proper clothes today. That's something I wrestle with every day. You saw me on video. I mean, I did put a bra on today, so kudos to me. I walked to a neighbor's house. But when you work from home, the struggle to look like a normal person is real. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, it is. Some days when I get ready to go to church, I'm like, oh, these clothes? I don't want to wear these clothes.
Yeah. Jeans are so constricting.
Exactly. And I don't even wear anything dressy, but I'm just like, I just kind of can't. But, you know, for an hour and a half a week, I feel like I should be able to do that.
Yeah. But it's so funny to me because, you know, now and then I try to take like a cute looking picture of me to put on Instagram or whatever, just to, you know, when it's like when you do have a good hair day or whatever, you want to maximize it. But my neighbors, the people in my regular life, they don't ever really see me that way. So they see me like no makeup, yoga pants. I showed up at my neighbor's house this morning. Like I did shower. So I'd just gotten out of the shower, wet, soaking wet hair. They're just used to me looking like a disaster now. And it's just easier that way.
It's easy. It is. What is something that you tried really hard to like, but you just couldn't?
Oh, goodness. There are a lot of popular things that I don't like.
Okay. Like what?
Like coffee.
What? Okay.
I do not like wine.
Okay.
That's gross. I do not like Gilmore Girls. I'm sorry. I did try. And I know it's really popular to like Gilmore Girls. And I'm like out of the loop on all of the... And like as a double whammy, people tell me when I post pictures of our downtown. Did you watch all that nonsense?
I did. I can't remember what it was
called. Stars Hollow?
Yes, yes.
So people will be like, you look like you live in Stars Hollow. And I've heard it enough that I now know what it means. But yeah, so a lot of those, like, I mean, we watch a lot of TV. Corey and I watch Netflix a lot in the evening. So I'm not by any means opposed to watching shows. But there are quite a few like of those popular shows that I've never managed to like. But probably coffee would be the biggest. That's the one that offends people the most.
Yeah, really. I'm currently sitting here offended with my coffee.
I am a tea drinker all the way.
What do you love? Like black tea or green tea or what?
Yeah, I have to have black tea every morning. I mean, okay. That's my caffeine fix. And that's just been over the past few years that I've, or maybe when, you know, when you hit the age that you just need help in the morning.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I do like Earl Grey or English breakfast every morning, but then I usually do another kind of tea later in the day too.
Okay. That'll do. Okay, so would you rather be a passenger or a driver?
Driver.
Has that always been the case?
I mean, are we talking philosophically or like actually driving a car?
Like actually driving a car.
I like it when Corey drives because I can sleep. So okay. If it's a long trip, I'd like to be the passenger.
Yeah.
But I am not a great passenger. I'm like the person that's like slamming on my invisible brake, yes, and telling Corey to watch the speed. Like I'm kind of like a controlling passenger.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could go into all the Enneagram stuff, but
Hold it. What are you?
I'm an 8.
You're an 8. Okay. My daughter's an 8. What's Corey? 9?
Corey's a 6.
A 6. I've heard that a lot of people marry the number right next to them.
Really?
That's what I've heard. Yeah. I'm a 1 and my husband's a 9.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the 8 is like our thing. My thing is like control is something that I like. That's the whole thing for an 8. Mm-hmm. So there is that. That's like a struggle for me in a lot of areas of life. But yeah. I should probably just be the driver. It's better for everybody.
Okay. There's some Enneagram shirts, and the 8 shirt is make way for me and my shirt. So good.
You know, I have to say, though, one of the Enneagram gurus, I was listening to a podcast somewhere, I don't know, and he said that he, instead of calling the 8 the challenger, which is like the name the 8s have, he calls them the protector. Mm. And I was like, I love that. It sounds so much better.
Yeah. So. Well, I think from what I understand, like as an 8 gets healthier, they start off protecting themselves, which is kind of what the control thing is about. But then they can, as they get healthier, they want to protect others and things like that. So that's where I'm trying to get my daughter to, is like, we are for you. You don't have to protect yourself, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, and I never understood the Enneagram's been so helpful. Her very favorite animal is a snarling wolf. Like every other kid likes unicorns and stuff. And she's like, no, a wolf. And I have to be able to see its teeth. I'm like, but what about a wolf pup? She's like, no.
That is the best. How old is she?
She's 10 now. And she actually has a giant decal of a snarling wolf on her wall. It was so painful for me to buy because I'm like, oh, why?
She is so on brand.
Yeah, she is.
As an Enneagram 8. I love it. She's just like putting it out there.
She sure is. And she doesn't care what you think about it. In fact, if you don't like it, that's even better.
Oh, yeah. She's fine with that. We're fine with it. It's fine.
I love it. Okay. So what is something finally that you can't stop talking about?
Oh goodness. I mean, this is not going to be a good answer, but I tend to like the thing I can't talk about is like whatever injustice I'm seeing at the time.
Okay.
So that doesn't make me a very fun dinner party guest.
But again, you're like the protector and the defender. Like that totally makes sense.
Yeah. So whatever thing is happening around me, like I get stuck on, I said to somebody that I was having coffee with not long ago, like, I don't know how to like portion out my outrage that I like, it's like, what should I be the most outraged about right now? And whatever that thing is the thing that is like stewing around in me and it comes out in words.
You know, it's funny. It's good though, because you don't feel like an outraged person. Like you don't seem angry and.
Yeah, I know. I'm not. I mean, thank you for saying that. I do appreciate that. I don't know. We grow, we change as we go, but I don't feel like an angry person, but there are, you know, if you want to see that side of me, you can talk to me about the injustice that you're seeing around you and the ways that people really don't care about it. And you'll see the snarling wolf come out.
It's so good. I'm really learning that we need those types of people. I'm so thankful. I mean, because I tend to be someone that's like, well, snarling is not appropriate.
Right. Well, and here's kind of a more fun answer for you.
Okay.
Do you want to hear about the show I can't stop talking about?
Sure.
Okay. It is called Ugly Delicious. Have you seen it?
No. Tell me about it. Is it on Netflix?
Okay. It's on Netflix. And I mean, my disclaimer is it's like rated for adults. So it's not a kid friendly show, but it's a food show.
Okay.
And it's a food travel show. But the host is named David Chang. He is Korean, which my two youngest boys are Korean.
Okay.
So we're drawn in by that. We are a family of foodies.
Yes.
So, I mean, it is just, he talks about like different cultural you know, very familiar foods and like goes into like the, like I keep telling Corey, I'm like, he is an Enneagram 8. Yeah. I can spot it from a mile away. The way that he gets like riled up about like the cultural feelings around food. So if you're a food person,
yeah,
or like
we
a travel
definitely are.
Person,
yes.
It's fantastic. Please watch it all and then tell me all of your thoughts about it.
Oh, I can't even wait because we have lived all over the world, my husband and I, and then we love to cook. Like, that's our main thing that overlaps that we both love a lot.
You'll love it then. I mean, we let Calvin watch the first episode with us. So he's our 13-year-old and it has a lot of F-bombs. I'll just like put that out there. Uh-huh. But we were like, okay, you know, whatever. But then there were episodes that came after that we were like, oh, there's one episode in particular, like, what I'm trying to say is probably don't let your kids watch it.
Okay, yeah,
but,
that's fine.
I mean, for you and your husband, I think you would love it. I mean, it was like thought-provoking, but the food was delicious, but you learned about history and culture. It was just like a perfect storm of food and all the good stuff.
Fun. That sounds so good. Well, Shannon, thank you so much. I feel like I've known you a little bit online, you know, but I'm so glad to finally get to talk to you.
Me too. I loved it. I feel like we could talk for a long, long time. So thank you so much for having me on.
Wasn't that great? Shannon's awesome. So what will your strategy be to struggle well based on what Shannon said? So I thought it was interesting what she said about infertility and how it does not always end in biological kids. Maybe you're dealing with infertility, maybe you've adopted, maybe you're still hoping for biological kiddos. Maybe you don't want kids at all, but your husband does. Whatever. Family is built in unusual ways. And I think when we're in the waiting season of not knowing how it's going to look, it can be really frustrating and really hard. Because when it comes down to it, we have so much less control than we think we do. So maybe in the area of family this week, you give yourself a break, quit being so hard on your people. If they don't look like the family that you thought you wanted or the family that you did want hasn't come yet, God's got it. Shannon also talked about surrender and how for her, surrender involved getting exactly what she wanted so that she could willingly lay it down. And everything that we get that we love, that doesn't mean we have to give it up. But in the area of spirituality this week, could you struggle well by considering if there's something that you need to lay down? I'll just be honest, periodically, I consider this show, is it something that I don't need to be doing anymore? And I sometimes think that because it's a lot of work and I just don't feel like doing it. But I think sometimes it's just important for us to bring something before the Lord and say, is this a gift from you and I'm just supposed to enjoy it? Or is it something that I love too much and it's becoming an idol? I think some of us don't have those conversations because we're pretty sure he's going to make us get rid of everything we love. And that's not God's heart. We don't need to be afraid of that. Maybe when Shannon talked about her temptation to want to just walk towards people who agree with her, we all have that. Maybe in the area of community building, you seek out some people who don't agree with you. She's got a really great story in her book about something that happened with her husband and a woman who was previously his enemy, kind of, and then all of a sudden, whoops, they're neighbors. Maybe you struggle well this week by bringing me chicken noodle soup, because I feel like I might expire here pretty soon. Your soup could save my life. Maybe this week you struggle well by texting some random people and starting your own misfit group. Will it be awkward? Totally awkward, yes. It will be scary. It will be weird. But maybe this week you struggle well by looking for those people who are on the fringes of a friend group and invite them over. Friends, if this chat impacted you, hit the share button. So many of you are putting it on Instagram that you're listening to the show. I love that. It's so encouraging to me, but also it lets other people know that you're enjoying the show and it's worth your time. One listener, Laura, shared about the podcast on her stories this week, and she could not even stop laughing while she was listening to the podcast to do the story. And it was the best thing I saw all week. Make sure that you have subscribed to this show because next week I'm bringing you Sarah Clarkson and we are going to talk about reading. And I got to tell you, for all the authors I interview, I do not do that much reading on my own for funsies. So I wasn't sure how this conversation was going to go because I don't know author names and I don't feel like I use big words. But Sarah actually got me super fired up about reading. So come back for that one. When you shop on Amazon this week, make sure to use the Struggle Well Project affiliate link. You're helping the show and it doesn't cost you a single penny. That link is amazon.com/shop/Struggle Well Project. Thank you to all of you who do use that link.
I also wanted to say I'm leading my fourth group through The Wellness Revelation, which is a remarkable book written by my friend Elisa Keaton that combines faith and fitness, but not in a weird, cheesy way. It's a very transformative study, or I promise I would not spend my own actual time leading people through it. So if that gets you excited or at least curious, go to strugglewellproject.com/wellness. There's 20 spots available and we meet every week for 9 weeks and it's all done online. And I promise you, something will shift in you throughout this course. So that's strugglewellproject.com/wellness. Email me with any questions you have. I'm so happy to answer them for you. Also, don't forget to join me on the socials at Struggle Well Project. But you're not just going to find me there. You'll be joining a gaggle of other women just like you who are working hard on this Struggle Well project called life. Let me pray for us. Lord, sometimes it feels scary to come to you with things that we love because we misunderstand you and think that you just like to take stuff away for fun. God, help expand our concept of who you are. Help us not to see you the way that we have been treated and hurt by other people in our lives. God, I pray that we would have open hands with the things that we really love, but that we would bring them to you and not feel like we need to hold on tight to them so they don't get taken away. And I think regarding the concept of having open hands, sometimes I feel frustrated, Lord, when I can tell that I'm closing my hands around something that I really love. But I love when I can think about just physiologically my hand, if I were to lay it down flat with my palm up, my fingers are going to naturally kind of curl in. Our natural state is to kind of hold on to stuff. And so for anybody listening who feels frustrated that they keep forgetting to surrender things to the Lord, that's natural to hold on to things, but that gives us an opportunity to continue to lift things up to you and offer them to you, knowing that you are good to us. We don't have to be afraid. Lord, thank you for these sweet ladies. And I pray that you encourage their heart throughout this entire week, God. In Jesus' name, amen.